Bob Moses, chair of the section. I work for a semiconductor company that makes audio silicon. So tonight we have Steve Hastings to talk about Audacity. And you all know that. That's why you came here. I'm going to let JJ introduce them because these guys work together.
Well, a couple of years ago when I was at Microsoft, they decided they couldn't stand my programming, so they hired a contractor to program for me. He turned out to be so good at it that when I went to DTS, I took him with me. This is I refer to him as the master of software. So, that with no further ado.
Well, there's one more ado. I forgot. Door prizes will be given after the break. We'll have a break at some point.
Yes.
So you must stick around. You must be here to receive your door prize. And you're stuck up there, so. Now, without further ado, Steve Hastings.
So I'd just like to point out that there are so many Steves here that if we got organized, we could run this room. So I started out with a slide that says who I am. I'm new to this audio stuff. Really, I'm an experienced software developer, but I have picked up a thing or two about audio by working for JJ for a few years. I have been interested in free software, or Linux and all that, for like the past 15 years, and I've been following it. And I'm pretty familiar with the ins and outs, the legal landscape, the social landscape, and I'm open to, during question and answer, taking questions about anything you have. On the other hand, please don't ask me to say, how does this compare with Pro Tools, because I've never used Pro Tools. I can tell you what Audacity does. I can't tell you how it compares to some of the competition. And I work for DTS. So, what is Audacity? It is a free audio editor. Feature-wise, it is similar to like Cool Edit Pro. I haven't really looked at Adobe Audition, which once upon a time was Cool Edit Pro, and has evolved since then. It may have picked up additional features, but it's an audio editor. And one of the cool things about Audacity is you can run the same thing, and it works on Windows, Mac, or Linux. I mean, you need to get a different version, but it will work the same. Things will be pretty much in the same places. If you can use it on one, you can use it on the other. And files should be quite shareable among the whole platforms. And that is actually a major strength. It can import and export many file formats. I'll have to just open the export dialog in a bit and show you how many things it offers to export as. And I'm going to show you a bit of what you can do in the way of wave editing. It does have live recording and playback, to some extent at least. And again, I've never used Pro Tools and the stuff, so I can't tell you how deficient it is or isn't for live recording of like a real session or something. But certainly for minimal uses like podcasting, it would be all you'd ever need. And I've read about a lot of people using it for that. It can use several flavors of plugins. I'm not sure which ones are important. We can check that later in the dialogues. And it does have some pretensions at being a digital audio workstation. It has the ability to take a bunch of tracks and just mix them all down to like a stereo track for final output. And in fact, that's the default, which is kind of annoying if what you wanted to do was work on a multi-channel file. But all you have to do is go into the settings and tweak it, and I'll show you that in a bit. How do you get it? You just download it for free if you're a Windows or a Mac user. And it's even easier if you're a Linux user. You just get it the same way you get everything else. In Ubuntu, there's this Ubuntu Software Center, and you can just look around and say, audio, wow, Audacity, I'll click on that. Or if you know exactly what you want, you can get it with Synaptic or even the command line apt-get. You can just say, get me the Audacity package, and Linux will go and get it for you. The latest version is called 1.3.13 Beta. What is this beta? Well, it's been in beta for years. So it's just the newest version. It's the one you want. It's dramatically improved from the 1.2 series. And it says all over it, if you're running Windows 7, you have to get that the 1.2 doesn't even work right on Windows 7. And they say they are edging close to actually calling this a non-beta release at some point. But whatever, you can use it now. You don't have to wait. Can you trust free software? I would say you can. I have been using Audacity for years. It's never eaten a project for me. I'm not sure it's ever even crashed. I mean, I see in the new release they say fix the something or other bugs where it crashed sometimes, but I've never had that happen to me. It was first released in May of 2000, so it's been around for 11 years, and is definitely one of the top audio packages in the free software world. A lot of people are using it. If there were any really serious problems, people would have tripped over them by now, and they would either have been fixed or people would have gotten fed up. So really, I would say you can trust it. And one of the cool things about free software is that when a bunch of people are using it, they can find bugs, and if they are geeks like me, they can fix the bugs. And the guy who wrote it in the first place now works for Google, and Google has sponsored some Google Summer of Code students to work on Audacity and add features. And I think there's like somewhere in the order of 3 or 4 full-time people working on Audacity these days. Another cool thing about the world of free software is that different people work on different things, and people have made these pieces which the Audacity guys were able to just take and build on top of. So if they have built a useful tool, it's because they are standing on the shoulders of other giants. So, for example, there's a library called Port Audio, which they use for managing live sound cards, and Port Audio talks to whatever your platform uses for the most part. So basically, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can focus on doing a nice digital editor. And I would definitely say Audacity is what you'd want to use rather than a pirated copy of Audition or something. I would definitely use the free thing that you can use legally. Microsoft, a few years ago, was on this vigorous campaign to try to convince people that if they use free software, that bad things would happen. And it's just silly nonsense. I mean, Steve Ballmer, he used both of these words. He said free software was a cancer that would eat away at you, and it was a Pac-Man that would eat away at you. It's just silliness. The license that Audacity is distributed under is called GPL, and that's the GNU Public License. And what it basically says is if you take Audacity and give it or sell it to people, you have to also share the changes you've made to it, if any. So what that means is that a company like Microsoft can't take Audacity, break it in a couple of interesting ways, add some new features, and then sell it as Microsoft CoolEdit. Well, they can, actually, but they also have to give away the changes they made, which kind of defeats the purpose. Other free software projects have different licenses that don't have these requirements. So I don't know if it's famous with you guys, but it's famous in my circles that Microsoft took this thing called Kerberos and broke it in a couple of ways, and now they sell it as Active Directory. And you can't just get a Kerberos system to interoperate with an Active Directory system because they changed the guts of it just to do that. So you have to buy Active Directory from Microsoft, and you can't get it for free. So the GPL is just intended to keep that scenario from happening. It's not intended to try to take anything from you, the user. And if you make a project, you can sell it, you can do whatever. The Audacity guys make no claims on your work. So you don't need to fear a poor quality product because it's free, and you don't need to fear some weird viral licensing issue. It's all good. So much as I like Audacity, I'll warn you, there's a couple of quirks. And like I said, because it's sort of trying to act as a desktop audio workstation, its default is you go to save a multi-channel file and it says, hey, I'm mixing everything down to stereo. I hope that's what you wanted. And in my case, no, that's never what I wanted. But you just go into the preferences and check a box that says don't do that, and then the default is to not do that. So it's really not that bad. And there's a couple features. The big one that kind of bugs me is changing the sampling rate. I don't even want to talk about it. It's just weird. So if you ever have to change a sampling rate with Audacity, read up on it in Google. Or use some other tool. There are other free tools you could use to change sampling rates in a file. Right. There's a command line tool called SOX, S-O-X. And if all you want to do is change sampling rate, that would just be it. Just bam, done. I also think the help system is not that helpful, but if you just fire up a search engine like Google, it's a really popular thing. Whatever problem you're having, somebody had it before you, and the answer just pops right out. Whatever you're trying to do, it's great. So let's talk less and run software more. I've been told that I should really show you how to install it. So here is the installer, which I downloaded from the website. And you install it just like anything else. You run the installer. You approve of it. It asks you, English sound looks good to me. It says beta. That's okay. So this here This is the license. This is just an explanation of the GPL, the GNU public license. You can just totally ignore this. It's all reasonable. And if you're not planning to make changes to the software and distribute it, then you don't care. It doesn't even apply to you. So we'll let it go install in the default place. Yes, we're installing on top of it. And go. And go. Okay. I have no interesting comments to make at this time. Okay, here we go. When you are ready, click Next. Okay, we're done. So we have Audacity running, and we have the menus on the top, and like I said, the menus are pretty much the same on all the platforms, and we have these controls, and they are pretty much the same. They even look pretty much the same on all the platforms. Yes?
Have you already tried to raise the screen and it didn't work?
Can't quite see the menus at the top.
Oh.
There you go.
Thank you. That was a good catch. Okay, so, belatedly, can everybody see okay? Okay, moving on. So, there's toolbars and stuff, and it's all pretty obvious. So let's start by opening one file. This is a very loud file.
We'll pick your word for it.
JJ computed a histogram on this file, and he discovered that plus one and minus one, the most extreme values you could have, are half of all values in this file.
So left to ground is that.
So this is a Mars Volta song. It's, you know, apparently a popular song. So let's see, what am I supposed to be talking about? I'm supposed to be talking about that we can select things and zoom and so on. So let's do that. So one of the things we can do is we can select some audio and we can zoom in. And if we just hit Control E, it zooms completely in on whatever we selected. So that is what I just selected. And if we say analyze, plot the spectrum, it's going to compute a spectrum and show us. So that is, we have our choice of window functions, for those of you who are geeky enough to know about this. We have our a couple of different choices here. Basically, I'm happy pretty much with these defaults, the Von Hahn window and a size of 1024 or 2048. Now, we can keep zooming in quite a lot. So let's pick a likely looking... Oh, here, this looks good. Okay, this doesn't look so good. You see, they've pushed the gain too hard, and that does bad things. If we look... I'm going to give you a demo of what it does in just a minute. But basically, it introduces crud that sounds terrible.
Play that track for a second.
Oh, the track is crud that sounds terrible, right? All right, so I'll play it. Okay, that's enough. So if we just pick one of these extreme... There we go. Now, look at that. At this point, it's not a wave anymore. I mean, this is a horrible, horrible thing to do to music. And I think this probably was music when they started. Yes, question?
I would have expected to have heard really nasty clipping that, according to some of the years, is very overly compressed.
It's just been like L1 to 10 times.
Well, so...
I see stuff like this one in the DAW, like shutter.
So the way you get this is you use the compressor to get everything up to this high level, and then you overgain it to the point where it just clips. And I'll show how to do that in Audacity in a minute. In fact, I think that's going to be our next slide. So as you can see, you can view down to single samples. Let me zoom in. Do you see You see those little dots? Each of those dots is a sample, and with the pencil tool, I can edit and draw a little waveform if I want to. You don't very often need that level of control, but you can go right down to the sample level and tweak the samples with it. Right now, I'm actually probably making it sound better because
my triangle wise is wonderful.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably better than what it was.
Just added a great bass.
Isn't extreme compression and distortion two different things?
Well, they're both nonlinear processes, but they have lots of harmonics and distortion.
So
perhaps from the point of view of intention, yes, but not from the point of view of math.
So just to finish this slide, you can double-click an audio file and open in this if you've got it associated with it. The second time you do that, it just says, Audacity's already running. You can't run a second one, which is lame. The Audacity guy should fix that. So if you want to open multiple files, you just use the file menu and just say File Open. So that's, I would call that another quirk, but you can live with it.
So this was in this limiting, was in the program before it was put into Audacity or Audacity...
That was straight off the CD.
Mars Volta mastered their CD that way.
That was how it was mastered.
And the one level is that an Audacity one?
One level, plus and minus one.
Yeah.
Is that plus CD and minus max, whatever, for whatever bit resolution you have.
So then, is that a clipping or just an extreme limiting?
That's a clipping.
That's cool. Is this a 24 or 16?
It came from a CD, so it'd be 16-bit.
Okay, so. That's 96,000.
Well, it would be clipping if you're running into a voltage trail. If you're running into a voltage trail, but you're running into a voltage trail, 6-point basically. Now, it means the same as a voltage trail, except that it creates even worse problems when you do it digitally. I'm going to show you that in a minute.
So, a quick word about save versus export. There's this concept of an Audacity project. So that's, again, thinking like a digital audio workstation. You can have a bunch of WAV files open, and different parts of them selected in different places, and you can save that whole thing, and it'll save as one project, and you can open it only with Audacity. But then when you want to produce a file, they call that export. So to demo this, suppose we want to take this lovely change I've drawn by hand here and save it. We would go File, Export, and just pick a file name and export it, and that would be the outputting of the file. And I promised to show you all the output formats, and this is a good time. So one of the defaults is what they call WAV is 16-bit, just pretty standard WAV file. Under other compressed files, you can then go into options, and then you can choose various things. So if you wanted to save 24-bit or 32-bit or float, you can do that. So again, the user interface is kind of odd. There's Wave, and then there's Other, and then if you click on Wave, if you click on Wave Options, it goes, there are no options, you chose Wave. But if you pick Other, then you get all these options. So once you learn your way around, it's not at all bad. And I do like it. I should stop being so negative. You'll notice also we can save as AIFF, as MP3, Vorbis and FLAC. FLAC is a good one. I'm a fan of FLAC. FLAC stands for the Free Lossless Audio Coder, and so it's lossless, so you only get about 2-to-1 savings in size because physics works, as somebody's fond of saying. You can't go below about 2-to-1 without losing anything, which is why the lossy ones are so much better for file size. But if you use FLAC, you get metadata tags and things associated with your file, which is kind of nice, and it's lossless. And the whole universe of free software, such as Audacity, can read and write these files, because why not? Interestingly, I see AAC and a few other things in here. I guess those are patented in the U.S., so maybe this is a little bit questionable whether you can use it without a patent license. But I have been told by JJ that the FFmpeg coders are not the best coders. So really...
Now, what's happened with them is they've voided the encoder patents. So they don't necessarily do a good job.
Okay, so he doesn't approve of the encoding you'd get from using this for these export formats. So I would say export to WAV file or export to FLAC would be really solid choices to choose. And that is enough about that. So let's do the tone generation demo, because we were talking about doing bad things with clipping. I can leave this slide up, or I can just go do it. So I'm going to make a new empty project, and I'm going to go up to generate. And we have our choice. Chirp is fun, TTMF tones, silence is boring. But we're going to choose, noise. We have our choice of several flavors of noise, white noise, pink noise, etc. But we're going to make a tone. So we're going to make a sine tone. The default is A440, 0.8 amplitude, 30 seconds. Works for me. We'll just do it. So there's our sine tone. Let's listen to it. What do you know? It's an A. So I select it. I say analyze plot spectrum. And what do you know? It's got one peak. Now, it's kind of hard to get the cursor exactly in the right spot. But when you have it kind of close, down there, you see where it says cursor. It says the peak is at 440. So it's telling us that the peak is 440. And by the way, if we use a smaller size here, we get a more approximate result. So here it says the peak is 433. And if you pick a crazy large number, it gets kind of a little crazy. It's very accurate, but it's kind of hard to see it. So I like to leave it around 1024 or 2048. Nice compromise. So that's what happens. So now...
So that's just the sense of the sample that the computer is using to make its analysis.
It's the length of the FFT. Yeah.
That's the length of the FFT it's going to use. So I selected a bunch of samples for it to feed into the FFT. And as long as you have enough, it doesn't really matter how many you have. If you do too many, I think it'll complain. Nope, it just deals with it. Okay. I think it used to complain. It gets better over the time. So let's select the whole track and go into the effects menu and choose amplify. So here's the amplify, and you'll notice it's offering 1.9 dB of amplification. That just happens to be the maximum we can amplify this without anything clipping. So it goes through, it looks at what you've got selected, finds the peak value, and then figures out what's the maximum you can do safely on that. And it will let you do that or anything less. But if we check this box, we're flicking the safety off, and now we can put as much gain on it as we want. So let's do 10 dB. 10 dB, whoosh. So let's look at it. Huh, that doesn't look bad. Why is that? Well, the answer is, that's because Audacity internally is using floating point numbers to represent this. And floating point numbers have exponents, and they can just handle overflows. It's okay. The problem will come when you save this as a 16-bit file. I could save this as a file, close it, reload it, or, as a quick and dirty way of doing that, I can go here and say, set the sample format to 16-bit PCM. So I'll do that. All of a sudden, it's no longer the float, and it's no longer a nice wave. It is now clipped off. And if I zoom in, there, look at that. Our nice sine waves are now horrible square waves. So let's take a look at the spectrum. What does this look like? Look at all that crud we introduced. That is what happens from the loudness wars. That is what happens from the people mastering CDs, shoving them through a compressor and compressing the heck out of them and then gaining it up until it clips. And if we listen to it, it doesn't sound as nice anymore.
Sounds all more like a square wave for some reason.
But we can do even better. Let's do this one more time really quick, and this time instead of using 440, let's use a prime number. So this thing, the overtones aren't going to be harmonious in any way. So we'll just select the whole thing, amplify it, flick the safety off, gain it by 10. Set the sample format. Oh, it's already 16. So...
Close enough to have the sampling rate that it's bouncing back and forth between the maximum, so they're sticking with the maximum as successive samples.
Interesting.
So you're claiming that's aliasing?
Well, wait till you see the spectrum.
So let's look at the spectrum. It's aliasing.
Yeah,
it's not regular. And what does it sound like? Now, we have undo, so we can undo the amplify and go back to this. And if we listen to this, basically we don't even hear it, because it's 20K, it's 20,000 hertz. All we hear is a little bit of crackly noise, which I'm not sure what that's from, but we basically can't hear it unless we're...
Probably hear it.
Yeah. Somebody who's young with undamaged hearing or like a dog, whatever animals that can hear the high-pitched things. So we can't hear that, but when we get the aliasing is in the lower frequencies, and so we hear it all over the place. So again, when you take perfectly good music, compress the heck out of it, overgain it, and let it clip, you introduce this horrible garbage, and just say no.
That's the point here, this is the follow-up here, asked the question about, is when you clip something digitally, any harmonics that are above half the sampling rate will alias back down. And so what we're doing there is the first alias of that is like 18 kilohertz and 16, 14, and 12. And what you're seeing there is all those aliases. And they're not, because we chose a number that's mutually primed to the sampling rate, none of them are even slightly harmonic. So the word "ick" is about the number to describe it.
You
recognize
who happened to be very popular because of that thing.
You recognize
my daughter is thrilled.
You recognize Steve,
just as an aside, I have done this in a classroom full of students.
It's
played
it
too loud.
I actually have had students
vomit.
Wow.
In class from a high frequency too loud.
I can only aspire to reach that level.
Yeah. I try not.
I hope I can make somebody here vomit tonight.
Can
we do that again?
Let's move on. So,
there's a boo-boo on my phone.
The slide deck does have all the steps. So if you get a copy of it off the website later or something, you can look at what I did and you can reproduce this. So let's move on to the cheap karaoke effect, a party favorite. So I'm going to close this, and I'm going to open a song by Genesis called "Turn It On Again."
And you notice you open this with FLAC, and it comes right up in the waveforms.
Yes, this is a FLAC file. I have most of my music kept in FLAC. I use a Linux tool called SoundJuicer to rip my audio files, and I have it set to save in FLAC. Why hard disk space is cheap? Why would you go with a lossy format for your rip? You can always make it smaller and put it on a portable player or whatever. You can always do an MP3 encode. So this is a nifty song, but it does have Phil Collins singing, and that's not for everyone. So let's. I said it's not for everyone. I'm not going to bash on him too hard. This is all in fun. So let's listen to the song a little bit. I'll start it here. Okay, that's enough. So, what they do for the lead singer, they're going to mix him equally to the left and the right channels. And especially when it's a kind of a power trio kind of thing, they're going to put one instrument very strongly in the left, another instrument very strongly in the right, and the lead singer equally in both. So, if we take the stereo, invert one track, and mix them down together, we're going to drop away anything that was mixed equally to the center, and that means Phil's going to go bye-bye. He won't be completely gone, but he'll be mostly gone, and that's good enough for our purposes tonight. So what we're going to do, we're going to go into this drop-down, and we're going to say split the stereo track to mono. Done. Then I'll just select just one track.
So does that create two mono tracks as opposed to forcing you to the stereo track? What did that actually just do?
Well, what that did is that basically expressed my intentions to Audacity to not consider this a left and a right anymore, just to consider it two tracks to do whatever with.
So it deinterleaves the stereo file.
Great. Okay, that's what I was after. Thanks.
You can always, even if you don't do the split audio track thing, you can always just select in one band here and work on just one set of selection at a time.
Because it works with interleaved stereo files, as opposed to Pro Tools, which does not.
Really?
No.
Wow. So, okay, so I didn't know that. So anyway, so the reason I did the split stereo is because I'm about to do an operation called mix and render, which is going to take these two tracks and mix them into a single mono track. And if it still thinks that there are two halves of a stereo track, mix and render doesn't do that. Mix and render just sort of rejoins them as stereo, and they just sit there. But by saying split to mono, we've expressed our intention that they're no longer to be considered a left and a right, and that when we do the mix and render, it should go down to one. So I've selected the whole track. I go into effect and just choose invert. So now it's inverted. And I can select the whole world here and say tracks, mix, and render. And there's our result. And what does it sound like? You can't get rid of them completely because they put a reverb and it's not identical in the two channels. So what's left is way, way down and sounds usually pretty reverby. And this is the exact same thing that you would get if you bought a cheap karaoke machine sold on late night TV that says, sing with any of your existing CDs. This is the trick they use. Very simple.
Also lose the kick and
the bass. You lose anything mixed identically to the center. Yeah. It's not as good anymore.
For $200,000, you can buy an AMS Neve console, which has a button on it that makes your mix minus. So you just push a button. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to really go extravagant.
Go well material.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that's right. For sure.
And as a spoiler, actually, there is an effect in the effects menu, which is get rid of vocals, and it's a little bit more sophisticated than what I just did. I think it's using the same basic trick, but it has a couple of tunable knobs that control its behavior, limited to certain frequency bands and things like that, so you can maybe preserve the kick.
When you inverted that track, is there some sort of visual indicator of that?
Well, if you looked real quick, it kind of flickered as the waveforms flipped upside down, but there really wasn't any.
But once it's sitting there, you can't tell that it's inverted now.
No, and it's just, it's the same thing as...
if you looked at the waveform, it would be upside down from what it was.
If you look, one thing you can do is you can look at the undo command, and it doesn't just say undo, it says undo whatever. So this is undo mix and render, so we'll undo it. And then we can say undo invert. So the last thing I did was invert. So I'll undo the invert, and now I'll redo the invert. Undo, redo. So you see the waveforms are kind of dancing for us here.
So it's like phase reversing?
Exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly like applying a gain of minus one. It's just flipping, minus one becomes plus one becomes minus one, just flips the waveform upside down. That's all it is.
I've used the word polarity inversion.
And it sounds so much cooler when you say it that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, from my point of view, as a software guy, the way I would do this is I would multiply by minus one, and then I would just add together the samples. And hopefully I would do it in the floating point domain. But you could even do it in integer if there's something this simple, and it would work just as well. So that is my cheap karaoke effect demo. And here are all the steps. You can see it later.
Is there an undo history?
Well, there is an undo history, but... when you save a project, it doesn't seem to save the undo history.
But if we went back into that, we could look at the undo history and it would show us the steps, so we could see where we were in the production chain.
So, the last thing I did was split, the next thing I did was invert.
Yeah,
so I'll redo the invert, last thing I did was invert, next thing is mix and render.
Yeah.
Redo that, and here, that's the last thing I did.
So where's the history?
Oh, is there like a drop-down showing all the steps? I don't believe there is.
So that
would be an easy thing for them to add. They've got all the information there.
And then you could see what the production workflow was, where you went wrong. Mm-hmm. Whoops.
That would be a good thing to suggest. And the way this works, internally, it basically keeps all your work as a chain of actions that you've applied, right, so that it can go forward or go backward through the chain. And that way, you can undo, and it's relatively cheap, as opposed to like saving a snapshot of your entire giant project every time you did anything.
Right.
So it would be very easy for them to add a drop-down that would show that stuff.
It would be even better if there was metadata that got saved to the file so that when you open it up in 20 years, mm-hmm. you can see, oh, I see what happened. How did I do that?
There is a free software project which is not cross-platform like this. It's only available for Linux that is intended to compete with Pro Tools and is called Ardour.
Right.
And Ardour might have those kind of features that you're talking about. So here is...
Here, are you sure it doesn't write that on the project file?
What?
Are you sure it doesn't write that on the project file?
Well, I'm sure to the extent that I tried it really quick this afternoon and it didn't work. So either there's an option for it that's not enabled or it doesn't have the feature at all. I'm not sure which. I had it in the bullet point. And in your project, you can load it and undo. And I thought, I better check and make sure that's true. And it wasn't. So I took that bullet point out of the slide. So here's a story. I went on a vacation in Edmonton, Alberta, with my wife. And we went to the Edmonton Space Science Center, kind of like the Science Center in Seattle, only smaller. And they have planetarium shows. And I love planetarium shows. And the music was really cool. It's this synthesizer music. And I said, I'll bet that the gift shop has a CD, I hope. And they did have a CD. And it was called Far From Earth. And it's all electronica made on the synthesizer by one guy. And I like all of it. That whole album is great. I'm a fan. But two of the songs have one glitch apiece. And I didn't even notice it for a while. But when you love an album this much and listen to it over and over, it's like, what was that? I just heard something bad. And so here is how I used Audacity to fix the glitch. So we're going to fix the glitch in track 10, which is called Gas Giant. You'll see the planetarium theme there. So we're going to open up Gas Giant. And it's a big file. So the glitch is around 8 minutes and 41 seconds in. Now, I'm gonna just play it and see if we can hear it. You know, it's subtle enough that it got mastered into the CD and sold. So you might not hear it too much, and the speakers might not be good, and who knows. But I'm going to play it, and let's see if you can hear a pop around 8 minutes and 41 seconds. So we'll start about 5 seconds back. It was pretty subtle. I was listening for it. It's there. But it was subtle. So let's zoom in a bit and see if we can spot this. Now, if you get the zoom level just right, it becomes pretty obvious. Look in the left channel. Do you see anything suspicious looking?
Yep, right there.
So let's select this and zoom all the way. You make a selection and hit Control E, and it expands to show you just that.
For some reason, it's a chirp.
Yeah, the planets.
So I'm pretty sure that wasn't on purpose. The song is fairly repetitive. That little, you know, melodic phrase occurs several times. None of the other ones have a chirp like this. And JJ thinks that maybe the synthesizer actually just sort of went a little insane for a moment. Some filter overloaded or something. So I would like to fix this. Now, one of the things that we can do, just as a quick demo, if I hold down the shift key, the play icon here, it says play or shift for loop play. When I hold on the shift, it turns into a little loop icon. And if I play this, we'll hear this chirp over and over again. Okay, enough of that. That's a little too short. But that can be useful when you're listening for things like a chirp or something like that. You can loop a section and listen to it automatically over and over again. So let's fix this. So our plan to fix this, which is fully documented in the slide deck if you get it later, but I don't need to switch all the time, I'll just tell you. Our plan is going to be to take the audio from the right channel, copy it, and seamlessly paste it over the left channel just enough to cover the chirp. And so we're going to, for about 2/100ths of a second, drop into mono and lose the stereo imaging. For 2/100ths of a second, I think we'll survive. And the chirp is a worse artifact, and I want to get rid of it. Now, in order to make this as clean as possible, we want to get a selection that drops in as seamlessly as possible. And Audacity actually has a feature to help you do this. It's called Find Zero Crossings, where we swing from the negative to the positive or from the positive to the negative, we cross through the zero. And so what we're going to do, here is the glitch. So I'm going to select, let's say, from here. Let's see, let's say to about here. I would say this is pretty much getting most of the glitch. If I say find zero crossings, like this, and the shortcut to it is the Z key, if I say this, Audacity will adjust the selection so that both left and right are crossing over through a zero at the same time. So there, that is a selection automatically done better than I could do by hand with the mouse.
So it's not where they're crossing individually on each side. It's where they're both crossing at the same time.
Right.
Okay.
It's intended just for things like this kind of splice, where you're trying to make the splice as seamless as possible.
Okay. It also matches the direction of zero crossing.
It does look like it does.
Yeah.
That's a pretty obvious thing. So.
And before you delete that, you're defining the upper track where all of those pieces are touching plus and minus one. Those are the glitch because there's more of them there. Is that right?
Well, I listened to it and I found where the glitch was, and then as I zoomed in, I saw that suspiciously filled-in section of the waveform. And you know, when you listen to it, that is the glitch.
But what he's suggesting is that when you do it by eye and not by ear.
Oh yeah, by eye, I'm just going where we're swinging wildly between plus and minus. I'm thinking that that's the glitch. I mean, I know it's around 841, and there's this suspicious, you know, extreme sawtooth thing going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I just said by eye, we've got roughly the whole thing.
Okay.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to split, and this time we'll just say split stereo track, because we're going to undo this in a moment. So now I don't want to lose the selection. It's perfectly aligned right now because I chose that find zero crossing. So I'm going to hold down the shift key, because shift key lets you modify the selection. So by clicking here with the shift key held, I'm going to deselect this track. There. Now we have just the second track selected, and I can choose edit, copy. And now I'm going to hold down the shift key and click here again. Now they're both selected, and once again, holding on the shift key, click here. We've deselected that. Now I've got the chirp highlighted, and all I have to do is say edit, paste. And there we have it. So this is a nice example of the power of a good wave editor. You know, we've really pretty seamlessly spliced this in. I mean, it's not going to be completely perfect in every way, but you'll never hear it. This whole thing is only 0.02 of a second long, and whatever remaining discontinuities there could maybe be like filtered away with super software. But this is really quite good. You'll never hear it. And so I've used this trick on this to fix this track and to fix the other track that had the other glitch. And so whenever I listen to this album, I hear it perfectly, and I like it. So I could play it, but I don't know if there's much point, and I want to make sure I don't go too far over time. So there's the explanation, and yeah, the last step would be to export it to a file.
So how do you make it stereo again?
Oh, I didn't do that. I'm sorry. All we have to do is just select them both, and then pick either one of them and say make stereo track. So just as we went to this menu to split, we go back to this menu to undo the split. There it is, a stereo track again. And actually, really, if I had just gone straight to the export, it would have exported as a stereo. It's pretty forgiving. So there are a ton of features. Let's look at this effects menu. There's a lot of stuff here. We have fade in and fade out are two of my favorites. If you're snipping a little snip out of a longer thing, you want to do a fade in and you want to do a fade out, even if they're really short. Especially on the end, if you just stop, you might have a partial waveform which will cause an impulse, and you'll hear that as a click. And all you have to do is just do a little bit of a fade out, and let's just demo that. I'll select some audio. So here, if I play from here, and we have a very abrupt ending. So I can just select some audio, as much as I want or as little as I want, and say effect fade out. And you'll notice it just gains it down. And now when we play it, and if we want a more gradual fade out, like let's say several seconds long to make a nice dramatic or non-dramatic fade out to end the song with, fade out. And there we go. That's fade out. All right, let's not overdo this one. We've seen amplify. There's bass boost. There's various ways to change the tempo and the speed. Here's an equalizer. Kind of, you can set it for graphic EQ mode where you have a bunch of little virtual sliders, or you can set it for drawing curves where you can just sort of add control points and drag it. And you can really dial in an equalization that you want. But looky here, we have a whole bunch of predefined curves of various useful things. I don't even know what a lot of these things are, but I bet some of you guys know. And you can save curves you've drawn, and so that's the equalization. There are times when you would want to compress. Here's a compressor with a whole bunch of knobs. You can tweak its behavior. There's all kinds of crazy stuff. There's high pass and low pass filters. There's this strange wah-wah effect.
What's the Nyquist prompt?
Well, Nyquist is a built-in scripting language which you could use to write your own plugins. So a Nyquist plugin is just a series of operations from these menus applied in the order you want them applied with the settings you want applied. And so Nyquist as a scripting language is very, very simple. It's similar to a language called Lisp. You put things in parentheses, you put the name of the function, you follow it just by its arguments. It's very, very simple. Yes?
Talk about the click removal.
Well, I don't know much about the click removal, so let's learn about it together. Click removal. Noise removal?
No, it's up higher. Up the top.
Clip fix?
Up the top of the list.
Top of the list.
You scroll down.
Sorry.
There. Click removal.
Click and Pop Removal by Craig DeForest.
So is that, you just play, like, you dub a record and play it back along its noise and it disappears?
That would be my guess, yeah.
Automatically, or do you have to go in and find it?
No, you set the parameters.
I can't see that.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the here's the knobs that it gives you. The first one says select threshold. Lower is more sensitive. And the default is 200. I don't know what the units are. And the second one says max spike width. Higher is more sensitive.
Scroll those knobs. So you can do 900 to 0 to 40.
Close to 900. And then it has this preview button. So I don't actually know what that does. And there's a couple others that I don't actually know what they do. There's this repair. I don't know what that does.
Can you do two of these things at once?
Yes.
Well, serially.
You're using the Nyquist prompt.
Yeah, right. So with Nyquist, you could set up a chain of things you wanted done in a certain order, and then you could add that as a plugin, and you could pull down that plugin, and it would do your sequence for you.
So you could play a record into your computer and put the RIAA curve on it, and put the click remover on it, and give it 40 or 60 dB gain, whatever you feel is appropriate, and then wind up with a clean dub, noisy record.
Well, there's something you have to remember. You want to have enough signal to noise ratio of the AV, so. Yeah. Better off actually doing a phono preamp in your AV.
So the gain
will take care of the
RIAA.
And because if you put 60 dB of gain on the waveform,
so many
bit signal, you've only got five bits left, and that's not going to be so
good. Oh, I see. So that's what you're
doing. Yeah. So you want to run the A to D full.
So you want analog gain.
Yeah. Because because the RAA curve is so steep, you also better off doing that in the analog domain.
Well,
because it's
Not very good to use.
Well, it's 40 dB of tilt. It's better than you're stuck with it. You know, it's better. It's a lot better than nothing. But since there's 40 dB of tilt, you're always better off.
So it's a quick and dirty, real dirty way.
It's a quick and dirty way to do it if you got it.
One of the things I found with the click and pop removers is they tend to take high frequency out. I don't know if they fixed that or not.
Well, I don't know how this one works, but I know the way you make a good
inherent
remover
you got
is you snap it to
inherent
it. And then what you do is when you see energy over 20 kilohertz, that's a click. Because, you know, anything that's coming off of that MR70 really doesn't have anything at 30 kilohertz, you know? So what you can do is you can tell when it's actually a record artifact as opposed to a... as opposed to an intentional signal by the fact that it will be able to have bandwidth well over 20 kilohertz.
I found something that worked real well. It's pain is to just zoom in on the clip and insert silence. And I spent a couple hours one day doing it by deleting it, and it was hilarious because it screwed up the tempo of the music.
Well, you don't just delete it.
Yeah, I figured that out.
The better way to do it, though, is to actually take an FFT and a signal before and after, interpolate between the two, and set it up so that the phases give you phase consistency at both ends. And so you keep the same spectrum across it.
So when you SoundForge does this pretty well, I do that a lot for vinyl records. It has a pretty advanced click and pop removal, shows you the FFT and the whole thing.
I have no idea how this one works, but
combined with sort of the noise reduction.
There is, as I said, a community around this, and so somebody wrote this and contributed it. And they might still be hanging around answering questions about it. And even if they're not, the source code is there, and geeks like me could take a look at it. So the Audacity Wiki would be a good resource. Just doing a Google search to find out more would be a good resource. I wanted to show you, this is actually a nice example of it improving over time. The old filtering features that they used to have were pretty lame. And now, this is like as nice as I could ask for. You can set all these parameters, and it's going to generate a filter on the fly that does what you've asked for. So it has a low pass, has a high pass, and it has a band pass filter that work this way. And just finally, like I said, there's this vocal remover, and you can set a frequency band to operate in, and it has several options. So I'd have to read the help in order to tell you exactly how this works. So to finish up the slide deck and go into, I've read about a church that wanted to have podcasts, and the church volunteers don't have a lot of money to buy software, and the church volunteers weren't super technical, but one of them was technical enough to write a simple Nyquist plugin that did like three steps, like apply compression, you know, apply some kind of a filter, and then convert to MP3. And so they would just record into this thing and apply that and then put it up on the web, and everybody was happy. So possible uses. Since it's free and works everywhere, you can just throw a copy of it on your travel laptop. Even, you know, this was written 10 years ago when computers were really lame, so it'll run even on a netbook. If you've got friends you want to work with and they insist on using a different software than you use, you could all agree to standardize on this, and you can trade files back and forth, and it'll all work, and nobody has to spend money. It'd be great for a class because the students can get it free and legal. And just if you're ever borrowing somebody's computer and just need to stick a DAW in it real quick or some kind of an editor, you know, it'd be a good choice. So I would like to take questions and answers. We sort of were sliding into that, and I thought we might as well be on the slide. Question.
I was recording a show a couple months ago using the Presonus capture software. It comes with the mixer. And the mixer crashed. And it was writing this, you know, 3-hour-long wave file. And all the data's there because the wave that was left on the hard drive after the crash is, you know, 2 gigabytes long. But I can't get anything to open it.
This will do it. Audacity has crazy features that just some geek like me thought would be cool. And one of them is it has a feature where you can point it at a file with a corrupted header and say, figure this out and open it for me. And my guess is that what it does is it just tries different bit formats and takes FFTs until it gets a reasonable-looking sample, you know, reasonable-looking spectrum, and says that must be it. So I've never actually tried that feature myself, but it's one of the features in Audacity.
By the way, exactly what you want. The file is probably not 2 gigabytes. It just goes to the maximum file size allowed by the operating system. Mm-hmm. That's the top end for a lot of operating systems.
Well, I made that number up. It's like 1.8 or something.
But when I've had corrupted files, sometimes they just look like, oh, they're all 2 gig or they're all 4 gig, and there's 40 of them. No, that's not possible.
I sent my hard drive to Jim Odom, the CEO of Personas. Yeah. I said, can you please recover my file? That was 2 months ago. So
I don't remember whether you just... you do file open or whether there's a special mode, but I remember reading that and thinking that will be so cool if I ever need it, and I've never needed it. I haven't had a corrupted file to salvage.
Can you pop up the metadata editor while you're there?
Sure.
Any other questions?
You'll notice that there's lots of metadata in this because I ripped it with SoundJuicer, and SoundJuicer saved the metadata in FLAC, and since this thing understands FLAC, it pulled them right out of the FLAC format. WAV files can also have metadata. MP3 files can have ID3. Basically, it can handle a lot of different metadata formats. So, another question.
I started out initially with Lambda 24, and the recording would be done with an interpolation of 32 bits, and actually a 24-bit format. But I was very unamused that Wavelab would not open these files. Because of the interpolation, I actually had to go do some voodoo back in Cool Edit Pro to save it as a file that Wavelab would read. And for that sophisticated program, it didn't seem to make any sense. It couldn't look at the header of the whole file and open it up. But you're saying Audacity will do that.
It should. I mean, I have never tried to open any file and had it fail. And like I said, I read that there was a specific feature where you could get it to look at a file and just try to figure it out, just ignoring the header. Just so if you have a corrupted header or something, it would just try to figure it out. And I thought, that is so cool. But I didn't actually study carefully how to do it so I could teach you now. So it's worth following up on for you with the actual problem.
Can you overlap sound waves in this? And if so, on the track?
So we'll get a new empty one. We'll throw a couple things in. We'll select like this, and we'll generate some noise. This is going to be avant-garde music. We'll generate some kind of a chirp and generate DTMF tones, because that's what everyone wants to listen to.
You were thinking all on one track?
Yeah. So you can use this for a blue box?
So you'll notice we have three tracks here. So then the default setting, so if we go into Edit Preferences, on Import Export, it says when exporting tracks, you can choose to always mix all tracks down to stereo or mono or to use a custom mix. So I work with multi-channel audio because DTS is a multi-channel company. I have multi-channel files all the time, so I don't usually want this mixdown, but I could set this behavior here. So now, when I go to, say, file export, and we'll call this avant-garde, it prompts us for metadata. That's another thing you can turn on or off. It says, your tracks will be mixed down to a single mono, and it is done. So if I then go and open Avant-Garde, there's our mixdown. So was that what you were asking? Did I?
No, not really. That's what I'm asking. Drag one file over the other and do a cross fit. On the same track. Drag
them over each other and
actually have a cross
fit. See, I don't think it does that for you. What you can do, is what I showed you here, where you have multiple tracks open. and then you can have it mix them all down to one stereo or one mono track.
What happens if you move the chirp up to the white noise track? Just take that region and move it up.
I think it's region bass.
So, it's based on editing these tracks kind of in place. So there's nothing to do.
Then you could copy that track up to the.
Oh, absolutely. So I'll just hit edit, copy, and I'll go up here and I'll paste. And it just.
It doesn't crossfade.
Well,
no.
He had boundaries outside the region.
I suspect it might, but you just have to find it. Because I can't imagine it don't do it.
Well, it's going to be in the effects folder. I mean, you just try doing a fade in or a fade out.
It's not a click and drag operation.
Yeah, so this is going to be lacking compared to something like Pro Tools. This is a great wave editor, and I don't think Pro Tools has that pencil tool to let you draw one sample at a time.
Yeah, it does.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay.
The samples is the discrete point.
Right.
All right, so they're both going to have their strengths, and this is not a full-on replacement for something like Pro Tools. And again, there is a project called Ardour, which I'm very interested in, which I want to learn about, which at some point maybe I'll give you a demo of that. Yes.
Is that third signal you got there? Is that a tone burst of some sort?
That I chose DTMF generation.
Play it.
Telephone fuse.
So it is a tone burst.
So I just went generate DTMF and took the defaults. So what are the defaults?
24508.
Looks like it.
It says DTMF sequence audacity.
Oh, so it's doing
so we can put in like X, Y, Z, A, B, C, E, 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 F, F, F.
Nine numbers.
1, 2, 3.
You can do jingle bells on
DTMF.
Yes.
So is the software capable with multi-track interfaces like the Persona Firebox or an Inbox or anything like that?
Yes. So the story there is it will work on anything that it can talk to through this port audio library. And the port audio library knows how to talk to direct sound on Windows, to ALSA on Linux, and to Core Audio on the Mac. Now, I actually have it in one of my slides, and I kind of glossed over it, but there are legal limits on what the Audacity guys can do with ASIO. The ASIO API kit has copyrights on it, and they don't have permission to just grab it, fold it into their stuff, and give it away. So they have solved the problem of doing ASIO, but they can't distribute it legally because ASIO is not free software and has encumbrances with copyright. So if you want to get ASIO support, you need to build it yourself, or you need to get a friendly geek like me to build it for you. But the Audacity guys cannot build it for you and distribute it because of legal encumbrances. They've solved the technical problem. There's no technical issue. So it'll do ASIO. So anyway, if you don't need ASIO, on Windows 7 you maybe don't, because on Windows 7 they have the new audio stack and direct sound is just a thin layer on top of the Windows 7 core stuff, which is maybe okay. And if you're a Mac user, of course, you're golden because Core Audio is great. So
is direct sound a Core Zero driver set, or is it?
See, under Vista and newer, including Windows 7, they have their new core stuff, and everything is a layer on that.
Okay.
So,
and I would guess that at some point they'll probably switch Audacity to use Wasabi on Vista and Windows 7, which would just.
Eventually, they probably will.
That would just kill all sorts of noise.
See, the thing is that, you know, Linux has Red Hat and Oracle and companies like that beating on it. This has, like, a handful of people who, like, pretty much, I think, are just volunteering their time. So releases are measured in months or years. It really takes a while. But it's already, as you can see, there's a ton of stuff. There's a faster turnaround time on just things like plugins because somebody can just write one and donate it. But something like overhauling the audio, well, actually, I'm going to take that back, actually. The Audacity guys may not be that may not have the time to figure out the Wasabi, but the Port Audio guys might. And if the Port Audio guys do Wasabi support, then all these guys have to do is just get the latest version of Port Audio, rebuild, and biggity-bam, they've got the Wasabi support. So it might actually happen quickly, I don't know. Question.
The company I work for wrote an ASIO driver that seems to work about ACIDI, so I'm confused by your lack of ASIO support in it right now. I'm trying to understand.
Well, I'm going to guess that Audacity was working through Direct Sound somehow, that you had two drivers installed, ASIO and Direct Sound, and Audacity just automatically used the Direct Sound one. Because what I read on their website is, we've got ASIO, but we can't give it to you. You have to build it yourself. Okay. Question.
Steinberg didn't assert the copyright on SIO at the beginning. So at the beginning, somebody may have used it, and then Steinberg got all up to be about it. That could be what happened.
Was Steinberg post Yamaha. When Steinberg got up and got about it by Yamaha, and
yeah,
stepped in for that.
Tell me a little bit more about what you do with the 5.1 kind of multi-track thing. What do you use it for? Editing songs together?
Well, for example, when I have a demo I want to give, I will take some long recording in 5.1 and I will pull out some section of it that I want to demo. And then my needs are generally pretty simple. Just zoom in on just the section I want, chop out the parts I don't want, do a quick fade in and a quick fade out to avoid any impulse clicks, and then export that as a new file, and I've got my demo ready to go.
And so what software would you use to read the discs? Are you reading, you know, audio CDs, PCM, DTS CD kind of thing, or DVD audio discs, or take your pick?
Well, one of the advantages of working for a large company is that somebody else probably solved that problem. For example, I work for DTS in the Kirkland office, and we have this large library of surround sound, including SACDs. And I said, how do you rip the audio from an SACD? And they said, well, you get an SACD player, and you hook the outputs to the inputs on a recorder, and you do it in real time. And it took a long time to do all of our discs, and they're all done.
So you went through analog? Is that what you mean?
They may have done it through SPDIF or something like that, but it may have been through analog.
You can't get... My understanding is that you can get Redbook. Yeah, you can get Redbook, but not a CCD, right? You can't get a DSD stream.
So I didn't ask that question. I would bet they did it through analog, because you're right, SACD is all locked up. But, I mean, if you have a clean analog over, like, a 6-inch cable, it's really not, nobody's going to hear anything. Especially if you buy monster cables, right?
I've been teaching a digital audio class, and I've been trying for years to grab the digital audio of an SACD so I can do some comparisons objectively and subjectively of various, of the same recording in multiple formats, but you can't get to the data.
That's right.
I'm not trying to pirate or anything. It's more of a classroom.
You can actually get an optical splitter that's a third-party. And I cannot remember the name of the company, but it will take an optical in and give you discrete digital outputs. And
but not in
actually, I think it's actually HOSA makes the product.
But it's not in a DSD form.
I don't know about that, but I don't think it'll use the digital domain.
Yeah, I don't think Sony lets any of the IC guys grab the data.
Yeah, you probably read about that.
It used to be the real problem with SICD is bit rate's enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just.
And the interesting thing about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is that if you had equipment that would do this, it would technically be illegal no matter what purpose you were using it for. In fact, according to my understanding of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, green markers are illegal now. Because there was a copyright protection scheme some people figured out, where how do you copy a CD? Well, you stick it in your computer. How do you play it? Well, you stick it in your player. So how do we make a computer reject the disk and the player accept it? And the answer was they would put bad data in the outer or the first rings, whether they're outer or inner, I don't remember. I think it must be outer. And so the computer would try to start rereading and rereading and error correcting and rereading, and it would sit there forever and never finish. And the consumer thing just goes, well, that looks lousy, and skip it. And people figured out that if you just took a green marker and drew a line all the way around it, it blocked the laser from even seeing the bad data, and so the computer would just skip right over it, pick up the good data, and be good. So a green marker is a device capable of circumventing a protection device. And the DMCA says you can't have such a thing. There's no exceptions for intent. There's no exception for fair use. There's no exceptions for anything.
This is all
question.
True.
idea was to take a CD and just put it in a safe, and then all safe cracking tools are available.
Perfect. Or in your pocket. Or in your pocket.
Safe cracking tools are illegal anyway.
Anyhow, do we want to break for take a break now?
Yeah, we can take a break and do door prizes.
Let's do it.
Cool.